The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Indeed. And as we always like to say, viewer discretion is advised. I am John, a.k.a. The Silver Box.
And I'm Jeff, X-Force 11.
Welcome.
Welcome to Gotham Undercover. So happy we're back discussing Gotham.
That's right. Five by five. All right. This is Gotham Undercover, episode number 94, and we are part of the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network. You can find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or search out the show's Facebook page by looking up Gotham Undercover. Jeff, how you been?
Good. And so we were talking last week about Teresa Walker, and our good friend Bat Jordan left us some pre-show feedback to kind of fill us in on the things that got reported as news way back in the fall that we just missed. So we're going to let Bat Jordan take it away and give us a scoop.
Bring it. What's up, Gotham Undercover? This is Bat Jordan Valdez calling in once again from Georgia. I just wanted to leave some Batarang feedback in response to something y'all talked about on your review of the episode Ruin. You were speculating about Jamie Murray's character, Teresa Walker. So yes, we already know her first name, and this is what I was going to say. We already know her first name, and we have a little bit of details about her. Not a ton, but they gave us a little tidbit back in October when she was cast. Deadline reported it originally, and they actually describe her just a little bit as Teresa Walker. The character emerges as Jim Gordon's principal nemesis in the season, who comes to Gotham harboring a dark secret about her past. And again, this comes from Denise Petsky's Deadline article about it. So yeah, I just wanted to say that. So we know a little bit about what they don't give us a lot to go on, but super intriguing stuff there. I know I've done some speculation of my own, which is, of course, Teresa Walker. That is not a character from the comics, but there are a couple notable Walkers in DC lore. I think the one that's more likely if they were to go one of these routes would be, well, I say it's technically the first version of the Royal Flush Gang to appear in the DCAU, because they appeared on Batman Beyond, the one with Melanie Walker, who I love so much because she's essentially Terry McGinnis's Selina Kyle, so I absolutely love that. But that version of the Royal Flush Gang, again, it's the first one technically that appeared in the DCAU, but in terms of the chronology in-universe of the DCAU, it's the third Royal Flush Gang. But anyway, that family, that Royal Flush Gang is named Walker, so maybe they could be going with an adaptation of that on Gotham. Or I remember joking about this a lot when this news broke back in October. I remember joking about maybe this is their way of introducing the Blue Lanterns to Gotham, and that this is tied in with Saint Walker somehow. Now, if that actually happened, that would be probably the biggest shock since the reveal of Jack the Ripper's identity in the Batman Gotham by Gaslight animated movie. So I don't think that's going to happen. And honestly, neither one of these could be the real thing that's happening on Gotham. It could be, maybe this is a case of, first of all, maybe she's an original character, or maybe this is a case of, maybe this is a Miranda Tate / Butch Gilzine situation where it's later revealed that that's not her real name and that her real name is something else that is a character from the comic. So it could be something like that. Anyway, just thought I'd throw out that speculation. Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. Bye-bye.
All right. Nice. Yeah, you know, we got a little more information on her, just kind of maybe some motivation in this week's episode, but great speculation there, Jordan.
Absolutely. That man is like a walking encyclopedia. All things Gotham City. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. No, we appreciate all that insight, Bat Jordan. Fantastic.
All right. Well, this week we're talking Pinadora, which is hard sentence. As meaning prison sentence in Spanish. It's Penaduro is the prison on Santa Prisca that Bane's from, but they changed the gender, I guess you'd say, on the word there from masculine to female, feminine. Not sure why, but you know, I don't know if we're talking about that. Selena's having to walk out a hard sentence, or, you know, I don't know, but that's the little info there. This episode was written by Itura Sosa. This is her third episode of Gotham that she's written. She had two last season, one of them being the amazing pig episode, Let Them Eat Pie, where we had the Jim versus pig battle royale. And then this episode was directed by Mark Tondreai, who's done four episodes of Gotham. He's done episodes of Night Flyers. He's done Doctor Who. So pretty good team there. So
I remember asking Robin Lord Taylor, I was like, of all the weird stuff that that Gotham has done with your character, what was the weirdest to you? And he was like, when they had me cook the step family.
Yeah.
It was like, yep.
Yep. All right. Well, John, what did you give this as far as ratings?
Well, I wasn't as enthused for this one as I was Ruin. I thought Ruin was really masterful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this one, I think, was a little bit more of a setup to kind of get the ball rolling for what will come for the whole end of the season series, all of it. So I landed right at a 7.5 lives used up for Jeremiah.
Yeah, I came down a little bit myself. I gave it 8.5 brain control chips.
Yep. Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. Okay, we've got a couple storylines. Two of them are really integrated with each other. We've got the A storyline, and I'll do my best Coldplay. I will try to fix you. But anyway, so that's Riddler, Penguin, and Hugo in there. So, and then kind of going along with that is the B story of who's in charge here. You've got Jim, you've got Eduardo, you've got Hugo, you've got Walker coming in from the outside. So all those kind of integrated. Those two kind of go hand in hand, really. And then we've got the C story is I don't care. That's who I am. That's the Bruce and Selena story, which is small but very powerful this week. So, John, where do you want to start off?
Yeah, let's go ahead and take care of Bruce and Selena.
Sure.
Yeah, this was really, really sad. Bruce is still, you know, he's fixated on Selena and why she is the way she is, and like what this, you know, power tablet that he gave her from from Ivy, and he goes and finds her with Barbara and the Sirens. And, you know, he's just, every time he gets a little bit closer, he gets disappointed, and he gets a little bit closer and he's disappointed. And it's really difficult to watch because, I mean, this is so much of his personality. He gets so fixated on certain particular things, but he could be doing so much, you know, within Gotham is in tough shape as it is, but he's just totally sidetracked by what's going on with her.
Yeah, he feels, I mean, he's projecting onto her and what he's gone through, and Alfred tries to kind of get him to see the light of things, of saying that, you know, she's not you, but he just can't get past that. And I think it's responsibility. He feels like that she's in this spot because of him. It's and we all know that it's not because of him, it's because of Jeremiah. Right. But he is not letting himself off easy that way. And yeah, he comes into the bar and they're toasting Selena as, you know, the guy that killed Jeremiah, and she's she lets down her guard, and that scene at the bar where she's just struggling. I mean, she's just,
yeah,
she's emotional. She said, I didn't cry out when I saw your parents killed. I didn't go for help. She's really, I know that this seed, this thing that's implanted on her is, like Ivy said, bringing out the darker angels. And we're seeing that. We're seeing her a little unbalanced and dealing with different emotions. And it's just hard to see them both in this spot because things are bigger than they are. And neither one of them really have the solution. And and Selena's not really ready to be saved by Bruce, I don't think. And she's not willing to, you know, he's taking the responsibility of what's happening to her on himself. And she is also taking, you know, all those things on herself too. And so neither one of them is in a good place.
And I don't think it's just that. It's always been in Selena's nature, I think, to get herself to the point where she pushes Bruce away because mm-hmm. she doesn't, I think, want to taint who she knows that he is and can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is just one more time where she is, you know, really pushing him far to say, you know what, here's who I am. here's how low it gets, right? And he's going to stick right with her. It doesn't really matter to him. And that's the tragedy of it, is that he doesn't care. He would go to the ends of the earth for her because she's the one that he's decided is it,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's the tragedy that I just see playing out here. That is really, really beautiful, is that she keeps wanting him to be the best and he just wants to go in so deep with her and she just can't handle that.
Yeah, and I think part of it too is regret that she feels on how Ivy's turned out. You know, of how different, you know, we talked about in the other episode where she talked about how she'll always see Ivy as that little girl, and you know, she's seeing the people that, you know, it's just easier for her to push away. So that she doesn't, you know, maybe bring them down. And yeah, that's hard. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to take to break her out of it and get to see, you know, that dynamic that we see. You know, maybe this is what pushes them to that dynamic that we see in the comics. I just don't know. But it was just hard to see, even though it was that short bit of the episode, to see them there and just to hear that come out of her mouth, because that's not who she is, but that's what she's feeling at the moment. So
yep. All right.
Let's go the who's in charge here as far as Jim and Eduardo. So this is very interesting because we have Eduardo come in with Delta Force and mm-hmm. come in to kind of save the day there. we've got, and I reached out to the fans on Twitter and even the writers, and I haven't gotten a reply back as of yet of the movie that was playing when Jim and Harvey go in to the arms dealer.
I
was very interesting because it was, you know, one of the characters was Mr. Gordon. And I'm like, you know, one of those voices sounded like Cary Grant, but I'm like, I can't recognize. But anyway, it's going to bug me till I find out. But anyway, so they're busting in to, they've found, you know, gotten the name of the arms dealer from Babs and trying to get some answers from him. But he has to drop on them. Oh gosh, they're surrounded, and I'm like, uh-oh, this is not gonna be good. But thankfully Eduardo and the Delta Force come in to save the day.
Yeah, and we get the connection right away that Jim and Eduardo have quite a bit of past that they share.
Yeah, it was interesting to find out that, you know, they've been kind of basically saving each other's lives back and forth and, you know, balancing each other out as, you know, as a team when they were in the military there together. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's a compare and contrast of looking at Jim's relationship with Harvey and Jim's relationship with Eduardo, and right, kind of looking at the differences. And Eduardo was talking about, like, you know, you left the service for this city. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to get some aspects of Jim's character outside of Gotham. Because we haven't really seen that. We've heard him talk some about it, but it's interesting to get somebody's perspective of him before he got caught up in Gotham. And I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic that we're going to maybe see in this season, up until there's a big change in Eduardo's character. you know, of him trying to figure out Jim and things like that. So it seems to me, and help me out on this, it seems like the force that they've got coming in, we yet don't know how they got here. I guess they came over on ships or something.
Yeah, I guess, but by boat or something, yeah.
But they are, seem to be not just searching the city for Riddler, and we'll get into that, but they are, seem to be maybe like clearing the city, because we go back to the map of the territories and there's pushpins in it, and we get the discussion, you know, Jim kind of gives Eduardo the lowdown on Scarecrow and how to go after him. So it seems like they're at work clearing the city of those different gangs. And how long do you think this is going to take them? I mean, you know, do you have a clue on that?
I don't think it will take them long at all. I think Eduardo was brought up to speed on all these different factions way before he ever got there. Mm. Like, I think that was just an exercise in, you know, trying to show his allegiance to Jim, as we know that his motives are not pure. So I don't think it will take long at all. I think in the next couple of episodes, we'll see pretty much things progress to the point where it's kind of Jim and his group versus Eduardo and his group. And I think this is maybe a little bit of the insight that we got in the very first moments of this season.
I agree. Yeah.
And that standoff that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Not to derail you, but I think one of the things that really kind of took this episode down for me was that it really did sort of seem like a reset, and it seemed like that way for Jim. I was really on board and really enjoying what we were getting out of him and Ruin, you know,
definitely the
figure out who blew up Haven at all costs, the bad decision to, you know, just drink and drink and drink and you know, smoochy smoochy all over Babs, right?
Yeah,
and, all of that. I mean, this was a man headed down a really bad path, and we didn't see a bit of that in him this week.
Yeah, and yeah, I totally agree with you, and that's part of the reason I brought it down too, is because it just seems like, I don't know if there, you know, there was supposed to be, maybe if there had been some time of time jump or an explanation for the change, or if this was an episode that was originally supposed to be aired a little bit later and got moved, that would explain more. But that's one of the things that just seemed like a just totally different. I know we've seen him, Jim, struggle with control and how he's mm-hmm. going to do things and how broken he is. And we know that, you know, as a soldier, he has been trained to kind of compartmentalize and put things away. But we just saw him so not necessarily totally broken, but so broken in such so many ways, like you said in the last episode. And it's just like, okay,
it just... We needed some touch points back to last episode, mm-hmm. and we just didn't have any. There was nothing of Haven. There was nothing of Barbara. There was nothing of the struggle that he had with Harvey and Harvey looking at him like, you're losing your grip.
Yeah.
Right? Everything was just kind of reset back to the way it always is. And I was just sort of like, huh. So anyway, I'm glad you noticed that too.
Yeah. And that's, I don't know. It's got to be, and hopefully we will see it in next episode when Jim has to really deal with the fact that these people that told him, you know, specifically, I guess Walker told him that they were going to provide help and that kind of stuff. And here it is. It seems like, well, they want, basically they have set Jim up to be their public puppet, you know, mm-hmm. in effect in Gotham, right. that they want somebody that they can control and to be the public face of things so that they're behind the scenes, pulling the strings.
Mm-hmm.
And, I hope we see some real questioning out of Jim of, okay, you know, how long has this been going on? Did something, was there influence in the city before the bridges were blown and they just ramped up? I mean, you think about it, I take it back to the first Batman film in the Nolanverse where mm-hmm. you have people infiltrating the city and getting control so that they could bring it down.
Right.
And it seems like a real league move here, but maybe on the other side of, okay, the U.S. government. But I'm just hoping that in next episode, we'll start to see him questioning, you know, how far back this goes and what's going on here. Because, he was, you know, basically betrayed by, you know, a friend that he had served with and mm-hmm. people that were promising him help have come in, but they really want it done their way. And, you know, they don't really particularly care about the people that Jim does. And I think his heart for Gotham and who he is what's going to maybe push him to, you know, take up the fight against these people who would be trying to save the city. So here again, you know, if we had Scarlet Cougar to give us some insight into, you know, some of the storylines from the comics, we might know a bit more. But that's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where they take it from here. And it's just hard at this point. But yeah, I agree. It does seem a little jumpy, and that's hard to say because, you know, Gotham has been so well written through these years that, you know, I'm going to trust them that they're going to make it up to us. But you know, it's just hard when you're in a short season to say, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, here's what I will say about that is I immediately bought Jim and Eduardo's past relationship. The chemistry mm-hmm. that they put between these two was instantaneous, and I never, ever questioned that these two had shared a lot of history together. Mm-hmm. And so hats off, you know, to, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the actor's name, for Dorrance, but
yeah,
but just instant stuff. I mean, the acting in this episode was monumental.
Yeah.
All the way around.
Yeah. So. I totally agree. You know, it was very, very good. It shows you once again, you know, Gotham pulling in actors that can pull the gravitas and looking at those different type of things. It just shows you the quality that they can kind of pull in and look at and say, okay, this is the type of character that we want you to play. And we're going to give you some information. And, you know, they got Shane West to come in and do Eduardo. And, you know, he's done a lot of different things. And, you know, he can kind of pull that off. And so it's going to be interesting to see what he does with it. But talking about acting, let's get into that A storyline. Because we've got Penguin. So that they find out the RPGs, he bought two, mm-hmm. and they kind of announce out to the public, okay, this is who bombed Haven, because man, oh man, they come in to question him. And I thought, wow, Riddler's really on top of his game with his IEDs and his wrist strapped with the remote control. And Eduardo's like, man. And Jim's like, welcome to Gotham.
Welcome to Gotham, yeah.
But that's smart, man. Golly.
Yeah, Ed is, I mean, he's trying to figure this out too. And mm-hmm. I love that he goes back to Barbara mm-hmm. and is like, look, I'm trying to figure this out too. I didn't do this. I can tell you I didn't do it. And I don't know, just, I'm so loving Aaron Richards this season.
Yeah.
Because even just for the couple of minutes that we get her each and every episode, it is so worth it. So worth it.
But yeah, you know, he's pleading with everybody, like, you know me, I'm not gonna, I wouldn't have done this by choice. And it takes some electroshock treatments to give him some insight.
Okay, I'm sorry, but that was dumb. I'm really surprised they spent all that time there. Although I guess they had to get it in his brain that that Hugo was involved here. But that was an odd choice to to take it with the mom and her two boys who want to get revenge on Enigma for killing their dog.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I'm like, okay, so we had last week we had, you know, the hitting over the head, jostling memories, and now we had the chip being fried by their shocks. Yeah. But I loved how he did the Brer Rabbit, you know, about the fuel line and oh no, do anything but shock me again.
Yep.
Oh, but leads him back to our buddy the Penguin.
This was the signature moment.
Oh my God. The two of these actors. Yeah. I mean, you give the actors credit, but Sosa's writing of those two in this scene of perfect. The back and the forth of like the honor among thieves slash bromance villainy mance, I don't know what you call it, but yeah. Like, you know, the listen, if I'm gonna kill you, I'm gonna do it, you know, face to face with my knife, you'll know if I'm coming after you. Oh man, that scene was amazing.
Yeah. When we're full at it, I will let you know as a friend. And it was like, wow. And that spoke, I mean, just that exchange spoke of their entire relationship over all of these seasons. And mm-hmm. it was just beautiful. Wow. And just the raw, you know, emotion coming off of it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was breathtaking.
He's good. He's, as long as they are, Penguin's like, as long as they have, you know, they've made up and they've got their relationship clear, he's happy to sell them out when Darby and the Delta Force show up. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that was hilarious. That, you know, it's like, okay, you know, last time it didn't go so well for you. And you know, Harvey's like, go ahead, count. And Penguin's like, okay, one. And then all of his henchmen get taken down. I love it.
That was good stuff. Good stuff. I love it when Harvey has his moments.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yep. But this leads us back to everyone putting the pieces together. Penguin remembering that he did, in fact, give Ed over to Hugo Strange. And mm-hmm. so we find, we get back to him working on things and Ed puts it together and gets the jump on Hugo. He's, oh my.
Well, you know, I loved it. You know, he goes for Babs for information about Hugo, and Babs is like, I can't tell you where he is, but I can tell you where his Igors are. And I had to like rewatch that to see what that, well, with closed captioning on. What is she saying? Where his what are? Oh, like Dr. Franken. Okay. Yeah. So she, you know, that he comes in a body bag. To Hugo's lab. Hugo's complaining about the last one having gangrene, and this, you know, out comes Ed with his huge gun. And, once again, you know, it has got to be fun for BD playing Hugo Strange. It's just got to be, you know, one of those fun roles where you can just kind of go over the top with that. And, you know, he just does such a good job of kind of, you know, going in and listening and seeming like he's concerned for our buddy the Riddler. And then he knocks him, you know, gives him that cutout that just basically paralyzes him. You're like, oh man, he's like, you know, he wants to delve into his brain to see what's going on. And so basically we learn that when he was fixing up, he put this control chip in, but he gave over control, and we find out he gave over control to Walker and her people.
Right. So going back to your original point, mm-hmm. yes, there was definitely interplay with Walker and her folks long before the bridges came down, because this didn't just happen, right? And this was one of the other things that I know is going to require more explanation, and I know is going to require backstory, but I guess just one of the things that I was just disappointed in, and yes, Lee and Riddler, essentially killed each other, you know, right at the end of season four. But I guess this just reduces Ed to, you know, literally like an android, you know, kind of a thing. I mean, literally he clicks the button and his eyes kind of, you know, peel over. And I hate that because I really wanted to end the series with our Ed, right? And it just seems like that's gone now. So I don't know. Maybe I'm taking it too far. What do you think?
I think that it's going to. I think that it's going to be resolved by then because we do see. I believe, you know, the version of the Riddler that exists in Gotham going forward at that last scene that we saw at the end of episode one. Mm-hmm. I think that he is integrated now. And so sometime this season, that's going to get, you know, we know electricity will short and bypass that kind of stuff. So I imagine he is going to somehow get that chip out of his head. And whether that's, you know, having Penguin force Hugo to do it or I don't know, but I think he's too good of a character for them to end this season on him still being under the control. I mean, granted, we're going to see the 10 years later thing. But I think this is hopefully in my mind going to be resolved before that happens, because that just feels like a cheat. I mean, it feels like, okay, this is how this Walker and her force got information. He was obviously gathering information for them about the gangs, doing some pre-legwork with taking some of those lesser-known gangs and baddies out forcing things so that they could be in control. But I don't think he's going to allow that to play for too long, because I don't think as much as Jim and the others, don't necessarily want to see a full-blown Riddler, they would rather have him not be under control of somebody else when they can help it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I hope you're right.
Yeah. So he's sent out by Eduardo to pursue Jim. I mean, I think that was interesting that Jim, you know, put the gun down and when he had the drop on Eduardo, didn't take Eduardo out but just ran. I thought that was interesting. He could have really gotten the drop, but he knows that, you know, Eduardo's got men behind him, and so, you know, doing that wouldn't have solved it, but you also have that friendship that he's not willing to take that step yet, so he's out the chute. Our Hypno Riddler is out to follow him and take him out, because Jim is not ready to take out Riddler to prove his loyalty so that he can have this position. So maybe that's what they wanted, of making him desperate, of taking out Haven and doing all those things, was they're making him desperate enough to accept their help and be their puppet and be so broken. But they just really didn't count on who Jim is and the metal that he has in him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I hate to see, but I think Jim is already starting to put the pieces together of, okay, there's something much bigger at hand going on here. So yeah, I'll have to run for now and try and put the pieces together again.
Yeah, I agree. And it's going to be interesting to see where we go from here and how, it's not no spoilers, but I mean, Eduardo becomes our Bane and how that happens in this universe is going to be obviously different than it is in the comics. Because Eduardo really in the comics was Bane's father. He was a different character. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of where they go from here and how that affects, because we, instead of, you know, we've got Batman confronting Bane, you've got Jim going to be really confronting Eduardo, somebody who knew he's known, and whether something happens to him and the forces, you know, Walker's forces, you know, use Hugo to pervert, you know, to pervert him and make him that, or he gets caught up and, you know, something else happens. It's going to be interesting to see.
Absolutely. So let's take just a minute to talk about Jeremiah.
Oh my God.
Because he in fact does wake up, and even though Selina stabbed him like, I don't know, 12 times, he somehow made it, and he and Echo are still working on their plan, and he apparently must have had some kind of armor on or something, because this was his intention all along, was to let her think that he had been taken out. The tunnel is what, nearly complete? And he's got a little project he's working on.
Well, so I was pretty confused on this section because, he had Echo talks about that you should have worn armor, but like maybe she had all over armor and he just let himself get stabbed once to produce the blood because he was still sore, because she stabbed him a bunch of times. So I'm like, questioning that, but the tunnel that they're in, like, I thought that the tunnel that this group was digging was going underneath the city and underneath the waterway to get help, but the tunnel that they go through takes them up into Wayne Manor. And so they come through the bat office into Wayne Manor, but yet, like, I'm like, they're just they were removing the cinder blocks and coming through to Wayne Manor, but yet the doctor was already up there with this couple. Yeah. And I'm scratching my head because I'm like, why, if you could get there one way, would you need to go through the tunnels? I don't know, but, you know, all types of questions. I mean, you know, we may get to see the purpose of the tunnel of through the Batcave and that kind of stuff a little later on. But Jeremiah, it looks like he has had the doctor perform surgery on these two to resemble the Waynes, to just, I guess, crash Bruce even further.
Yeah, wow. That's some serious psycho stuff.
Yeah, I mean, wow. Yeah, that little scene at the end was just wow. But once again, Jeremiah and Echo, the back and the forth, you're getting a little sentimental. Rattle that bullet around a little bit. And she does, and he's like, better? She's like, yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm loving this. And that little cackle, oh gosh, it was so good. You know, I didn't even put a storyline in for that because it was just like, I was just still blown away. I've seen that scene a couple times. I was like, oh my goodness.
Okay. So good stuff. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Anything else you want to share about the episode?
I think that'll cover it. Yeah.
All right.
Meanwhile, in the Hall of Justice.
Well, you know, we gave you a little longer for feedback this time, and thankfully, because of that,
our good friend Harley Quinn was able to get us some feedback. So take it away, Harley.
Hello, Gotham Undercover. This is Harley Quinn. I wanted to send in some feedback since we had an extended deadline, but I don't have a whole lot of theories. I mean, I'm really enjoying how they're going to wrap everything up, and I'm enjoying like all of the Easter eggs and all of the things that we're getting to see, but I just don't know how to like theorize on anything that's happening. So instead of fun theories, I'm just going to give you my quick key thoughts and just kind of how I felt about the episode. I mean, first, I probably should have seen that, quote, twist coming at the end, but I didn't. Although, in hindsight, I definitely feel like, it was probably pretty telegraphed. But anyway, this one was kind of fun. You know, we've kind of got that introduction of the government is bad, and they're kind of behind all the bad things happening in Gotham, and that's sort of a little nod to the, you know, the beginning and the end, if you will, or the end and the beginning that we saw in the premiere. I don't understand what is going on with Jeremiah, like, at all. I was convinced he was dead, and then I was very confused because they very clearly, in this season on Gotham, showed him and Bruce being confronting each other in a very, like, iconic scene. So I don't know what's going on with him, but I'd like more information. And I love the stuff with the Riddler and the fact that he's being controlled. And now that just really makes me want to know what in the world happened to Lee. Where is she? And is she being controlled by the government? I need to know. So hopefully we'll get these answers before the end. Anyway, looking forward to the podcast, looking forward to the rest of the season, and I'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks so much, Harley.
I am right there with you. I need my Lee.
Yeah.
I need to know what's going on. And I think we're going to get something really, really soon.
I hope so.
Thank you, Harley, for giving us your thoughts on that. Yeah, it is difficult to kind of speculate a bunch of theories at this point. Just have to kind of watch it and like go, oh, wow. All right. We have written feedback from Chris. Apologies for being late last week. My wife was off work and she was watching reruns of Top Chef. And as Samuel L. Jackson might say in Pulp Fiction, that meant I was watching reruns of Top Chef. I got a strong Siskel and Ebert at the movies vibe when the arms dealer was watching the movie before Jim and Harvey busted him. Oh, is it me? Or would Shane West make a pretty good Deathstroke too?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah, I could see that.
As Jim was jumping across the tables, I kept thinking of Indiana Jones going to get the grain in The Last Crusade. I think Grail. That's what he meant. Yeah, okay. I'm relieved that Edward the dog is not dead. But first, did you name your dog after me? Ed and Oswald vowing to come directly at each other if that day ever comes was oddly touching, right? Wasn't it? The mural on the back wall of Oswald's office looks very similar to murals in the Greater Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky Airport. They go nicely with our Union Terminal looking a little bit like the Hall of Justice. I've mentioned this before, but when I was a kid, I was sure the Union Table was the Hall of Justice.
That's right.
Yeah, and he sent a picture of it, too, that's in the Facebook group. Mm-hmm. Hugo Strange has a Sweeney Todd chute to dispose of the bodies. Why didn't Pig have one so that he could sing Joanna for us?
Oh, wow.
Oh, my. I assume we all thought of George Takei there. Love the scene with Harvey and Bruce.
Oh,
Bruce doing the Batman disappear act was just the cherry on top here. Absolutely, Chris. I'm glad you brought this up. That was a very nice scene that they put in there between those two. They don't get a lot of interaction just on their own. That was fantastic.
It was.
I gotta hope something happens between now and the end. Not sure I like being Ed being a puppet. All I'm saying is I can't see Frank Gorshin's Riddler being a puppet.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Harley's voice seems to be patterned after the animated Harley Quinn. I want at least one Mr. J before the series ends. Oh. I've been waiting to hear Jeremiah do the maniacal Joker laugh, and here we go.
Mm-hmm.
And I love family reunions. Does that mean the corpses are Thomas and Martha? Why did you say that name? Wayne, that's a very sick, twisted Joker thing to pull off.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Another good episode. Not sure I like Ed being a puppet. I can only hope that his final transition to the Riddler involves breaking free of this. Jeremiah more than made up for it, though, in his very brief appearance. I feel Shane West would have been better served as Deathstroke. Still, I give this episode 8.5 out of 10. Bullets rattling around in the head. As for Batmobile keys, for me, Jeremiah is the Ric Flair of Gotham, and once he's on enough in an episode, he will get the keys. But this week, I have to give them to Jim. If for no other reason than the fact that he channeled classic Commissioner Gordon the way he folded his arms while questioning Oswald. That's all for me. Take it easy. Chris.
All right. Great points here. And I'm sorry, I did hear see Ric Flair, and all I can think is like, woo! Anyway, man, oh man, good stuff, good stuff.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. And closing out, we don't have any green butterfly this week, but we do have some Bat Jordan feedback for this episode. Take it away, Bat Jordan.
What's up, Gotham Undercover? This is Bat Jordan Valdez calling in once again from Georgia, calling to talk about the latest episode of Gotham. I already left some battering feedback before the episode aired, but here's my post-show feedback. First of all, of course, I got to start off with the Batcat scene because I adore it so, so much. Bruce telling Selina he knows her, reinforcing what I always say, which is that Bruce and Selina understand one another better than anyone. It reminds me of a scene from Batman number 15 where Batman is telling Holly Robinson, he says, she's the only one who understands what she knows who I am, what I am, and she loves me anyway. So that's an example of Batman talking to Holly about how Selina understands him better than anyone. Here, this episode of Gotham, we're seeing how Bruce understands Selina better than anyone. So I adore that so much. It also reminds me of the scene from The Dark Knight Rises where Bruce tells Selina, there's more to you than that. And she ultimately proves him right in that movie, my favorite live action movie of all time. And in this episode of Gotham, we see a similar thing where Bruce sees the hero in Selina even when Selina doesn't see it in herself. And so I love that so much. Again, he knows her better than anyone, and I adore that. Also, with Bruce in this episode, you know, I always talk about these Batman glimpses we get with Bruce on Gotham and how they become more and more prevalent. This episode, we got Bruce pulling a disappearing act on Bullock, so that was super entertaining. We get our introduction to Bane, not Bane yet, but Eduardo, and I love that. I love, with this version of Bane, the dynamic he's got with Gordon they're going with, so I think that's super cool. The scene with Gordon where he's like going over the tables, it reminds me on the second Human Target TV show, the more recent one, there's a couple moments where there's two scenes actually where Christopher Chance has to do something similar to that. So I got a similar vibe with that with Gordon when he was doing that thing. So that was super cool. Also with Bane, I just love hearing him say the word Nightfall. Like that's a super cool nod. Oh, and then also the thing I will mention is going back to, of course, I got to talk about it some more, the Batcat scene. Just Cameron and David in that scene, just they are both, I always think they're Batastic, but in this scene, I really think this is one of their, both of them, the emotions in that scene that they convey. I just wanted to say how much I adore that. So Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. I will talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.
Good stuff. Good.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bat Jordan.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. We having some issues with the website, but he was able to send me the feedback in audio, and the crazy thing is I got the audio feedback that he sent the first time today. So we would have had it either way, but it's good. Nice. Good to hear the insight there. So if you want to leave your feedback, here's what you need to do.
To have your feedback heard or read on Gotham Undercover, please submit it to us by our weekly deadline of Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern. You can call us at 304-837-2278. or go to our feedback site at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can type out text, attach an audio file, or use the provided SpeakPipe widget. Follow our show on Instagram, Tumblr, and Twitter at GothamGSM, or join our popular Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/GothamUndercover. To get a full listing of all of our Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network shows, simply go to goldenspiralmedia.com. And to leave a 5-star review for this or other podcasts, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. And now, here are your hosts, Karen and Jeff.
Well, we've got some news. There's no Gotham this week. Well, I should say no new Gotham. There's a repeat of Year Zero. But next week, we've got 13 Stitches, and the description is as follows. Gordon assembles an unlikely team to protect Gotham from Eduardo Dorrance and his Delta Force, just as Lee Tompkins resurfaces. Yay! Barbara reveals shocking news that will change Gordon's life forever. Okay.
Jim, I'm pregnant. Yeah,
that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, okay. Okay. Meanwhile, Selina and Penguin team up to outsmart fellow villain Magpie, and in the all-new 13 Stitches episode of Gotham. So we've got a new villain coming up, and you know they're throwing all these villains in this season. I saw some talk online that, and I had to pause the scene to see it, but one of the scenes in the GCPD, there was a guy wearing a skull mask, and people are like, is that, you know, the you know, Black Skull, you know, so, you know, who knows, you know, how big of, you know, shout outs we'll see and how many big villains we'll get, you know, rolled into this season.
It'll take years to undo all the Easter eggs that they've thrown in this season. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Our buddy from Twitter, Ken in Chicago, gave a great article, and I'll throw it up in the blog post. It's 10 things Gotham does better than the Dark Knight trilogy. And, some great great analysis there of really looking at, the comparison between those two. You know, we said, you know, hey, they're in different universes, they're both good, but it kind of breaks down some of the things that Gotham really shines with, and just good stuff all around. You know, just I really love the point that they bring up about how, you know, it's number 7. It talks about the building of the strong relationship between Bruce and Alfred, and you know, just really showing their bonding and their relationship with each other, of who they are together. And you know, they talk about how that this kind of harkens back to the Batman Earth One comic book series. So yeah, it's a really good article. It's a short article. It's and it's well worth the read. So I'll have that in the blog post so people can check it out.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you, Ken.
Yeah, definitely. Well, John, thank you so much for coming in and giving us a hand this week.
Absolutely. It's always my pleasure. So I appreciate you asking.
All right. Well, we've got a week off, but we'll see you next time on 13 Stitches. And keep checking out the Facebook page. We've got episode descriptions up for the next couple episodes. As soon as they get them out on the Fox publicity site, we'll put them up. And as soon as there's pictures up for 13 Stitches, and as soon as the next round of photos come up, we'll have them up there. But it looks like some interesting times in Gotham, and we're excited to be here to cover them with you.
Absolutely. Thanks for all you do there, Jeff. So appreciate it very much. And it's the Silver Vox signing out.
X-Force 11 is out.